Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So today we're reading from text 5 on page 8 of the little green book. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Sampadaha Krattavo Loka. Sampada Krattavo Loka. Mahishi Brataro Mahi. Jambudvip adhipatyamcha yashascha tridivangatam sampada krattavo lokah mahishi bhrataro mahi jambudvip adhipatyamcha yashascha tridivangatam. Sampada krattavo loka.
Mahishi bhrataro mahi.
Mahishi bhrataro mahi.
Jambudvipadhipatyamcha.
Yashascha tridivangatam sampada kratavo loka mahishi brataro mahi jambu dvipati patyangcha yashascha tridivangatam sampadan tutu voloka
bhrataro mahi
mahishi bhrataro mahi
jambu dvipadipatyam cha
yashascha tridivangatam sampada kratavo loka mahishi bhrataro mahi Jambudvipadhipatyamcha yashascha tridivangatam sampada kratavo loka mahishi bhrataro mahi Jambudvipadhipatyamcha yashascha tridivangatam. Anyone else? Sampada krattavo loka mahishi brataro mahi jambudvipadipatyamcha yashascha tridivangatam sampadaha opulence krattavaha sacrifices. Lokaha, future destination. Mahishi, the queens. Brataraha, the brothers. Mahi, the earth. Jambudvipa, the globe or planet of our residence. Adhipatyam, sovereignty. Cha, also. Yashaha, fame. Cha and Tridivam, celestial planets. Gatam, spread over. Translation. News even reached the celestial planets about Maharaj Yudhishthira's worldly possessions, the sacrifices by which he would attain a better destination, his queen, his stalwart brothers, his extensive land, his sovereignty over the planet Earth, and his fame, etc. Please repeat. News even reached the celestial planets.
About Maharaj Yudhishthira's worldly possessions.
The sacrifices by which he would attain a better destination. His queen, his stalwart brothers, his extensive land.
His sovereignty over the planet Earth and his fame, etc.
Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Only a rich and great man's name and fame are known all over the world, and the name of and fame of Maharaj Yudhishthira reached the higher planets because of his good administration, worldly possessions, glorious wife Draupadi, the strength of his brothers Bhima and Arjuna, and his solid sovereign power over the world known as Jambudvipa. Here the word lokaha is significant. There are different lokas, or higher planets, scattered all over the sky, both material and spiritual. A person can reach them by dint of his work in the present life, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 9.25. Who knows 9.25? Go ahead. Jai. So... Yanti Deva Vrata Devan, those who worship the demigods go to the planets of demigods. And Pitrinyanti Pitravrataha, those who worship the ancestors that go to those planets of the ancestors. Bhutani Yanti Bhuteja, those who worship the spirits and ghosts, Bhutas, they go live among such beings. And Yanti Mad Yajino Pimam, those who worship Krishna, they go to Krishna, go to me, he says. So, no forceful entrance is allowed there. The tiny material scientists and engineers who have discovered vehicles to travel over a few thousand miles in outer space will not be allowed entrance. That is not the way to reach the better planets. One must qualify himself to enter into such happy planets by sacrifice and service. Those who are sinful in every step of life can expect only to be degraded into animal life to suffer more and more the pangs of material existence. And this is also stated in Bhagavad Gita 16:19. Okay, who knows that one? Tanaham dushita kruran, I think. Anyway, he says that he sends those who are demoniac perpetually down into lower and lower species of life. Maharaj Yudhishthira's good sacrifices and qualifications were so lofty and virtuous that even the residents of the higher celestial planets were already prepared to receive him as one of them. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sahagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Bhatam Tang Sajivam Sadvaitam Sabhatutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Tashivishakan Vitangcha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Ti Namine Sri Varshabhanavi Devi Daitaya Kripabdhaye Krishna Sambandha Vijnana Daine Prabhave Namaha Madhurya Jvala Premadhyaya Sri Rupanuga Bhaktida Sri Gaura Kurunas Shakti Vigrahaya Namostute Namaste Gauravani Sri Murtaye Dinatarine Rupanuga Virudhapa Siddhanta Dvanta Harine Namo Gaura Kishoraya Sakshad Vairagya Murtaye Vipralambhara Sambhode Padambhujayate Namaha. Page 12. Namo bhakti vinodaya sachidananda namine gora shakti swarupaya rupanuga varayate goravir bhava bhume stvang nirdeshta sajjana priyaha vaishnava sarvabhoma shri jagannathaya te namaha vancha kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindubhya eva cha patitanang pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Namo Mahabharanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gaura Tvishe Namaha Pancha Tattvatmakam Krishnam Bhakta Rupa Swarupakam Bhakta Avataram Bhakta Kyam Namami Bhakta Shaktikam He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Jayatang suratau pangor mama manda matergati matsarvasva padam bhojao radha madana mohano divya brindaranya kalpa drumadha srimad ratnagara singhasanastau srimad radha srila govinda devau krishtali bhiksevyamano smarami srimad rasarasaram bhivangshi vatatatakstitaha karshan venu svanayar gopir gopinatha shriyestunaha Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vrindaye Tulsidevyaye Priyaye Keshavasyacha Krishna Bhakti Pradidevi Satyavatyay Namo Namaha Shri Nishingha Jaya Nishingha Jaya Jaya Nishingha Prathadesha Jaya Padma Mukha Padma Bringa Matsamo Nasti Papatma Naparadhi Chakashchana Parihare pilajame king bruve purushottama yuvatinang yata yuni yunang cha yuvatau yata mano bhi ramate tadvan mano me ramatang toyi bhumaus kalita padanang bhumire babalambanam toyi jata paradhanang tvameva sharanang prabho govinda valabhe radhe prartaye tvamahang sada Twadiyam iti jana tu govindo mang twaya saha Radhe brindabhanadhishe karunamrita vahini Kripaya nijapadabja dasyang mayang padiyatam Vande nanda vrajastrinam padarenum abhikshnashaha Yasang harikator gitang punati bhuvanatrayam Nama Shreshtam Manum Apisachi Putra Matra Swarupam Shri Rupam Tasyagra Jamuru Puring Maturing Goshtavatim Radha Kundang Garivaram Ahoradhika Madhavasam Prapto Yasya Pratita Kripaya Shri Gurung Tang Natosmi Adadanas Trinang Dantair Idang Yache Punak Punaha Srimad Rupa Padam Bhoja Rajohang Syam Bhave Bhave Antaya Madrira Balaharidasya Varyo Yadrama Krishna Charanas Parasha Pramodaha Manang Tanoti Sahago Ganayostayor Yat Paniya Suya Vasakandara Kandamulahi Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. News even reached the celestial planets about Maharaj Yudhishthira's worldly possessions, the sacrifices by which he would attain a better destination, his queen, his stalwart brothers, his extensive land, his sovereignty over the planet Earth, and his fame, etc. So Suta Goswami is continuing to glorify the reign of Maharaj Yudhishthira. We heard about it last week. And if someone has, you know, many wonderful qualities then and riches and beauty and opulences and things like that, then they become famous and you hear about them in the, you know, in a bigger area, greater area, and things like that. But they're saying that Maharaj Yudhisthira's fame was so great, his power and opulence and righteousness and so forth was so great that that he was famous even in the heavenly planets. So, this is a greater fame than just someone who's famous among certain people of the world, you know, or among certain communities in the world, but he was famous even among all the demigods who rule the universe. And he performed wonderful sacrifices. So this is the nature of religion, of human life, that we're meant for performing sacrifices. We're not really enjoyers. We're not meant to just be the center of attention. We have to turn our direction toward the fact that we're really servitors. In fact, we're forced, right? In our life, we're forced to work. We're forced to get old. We're forced to serve others in so many ways and serve nature. We're not completely free. That's not our nature. And so we have to perform sacrifice to the superiors. And by performance of sacrifice, what is it? Saha yagya. Prajashrishtva purovacha prajapatim anena prasavishyadvam eshavos tushtakamaduk deva bhavayatanena te deva bhavayantu vaha parasparang bhavayantakshaya paramavapsita. So in the beginning of creation, the Lord gave the sacrifices, and he created generations of men and demigods, and the men performed sacrifices, and the demigods also, they're dependent on receiving sacrifices from humans, actually, interestingly, and so there's a mutual, you know, what do you say, like a symbiotic, one hand washes the other. That by performing sacrifices, then the demigods receive the honor of the humans, which nourishes them, and then they also provide, they shower all the blessings of the sunlight and the rain and all the necessities of life. And so this is the system, the cycle of sacrifice. And without that cycle, then one lives in vain. One who what's the next verse about that he becomes a thief? Stena evasa. One who enjoys these blessings without offering sacrifice is actually a thief. But the yagya shishtashana santo mucyante sarvakil bishai punjate te. So, and we also learn that we can satisfy all of the demigods if we satisfy Krishna. Pouring the water should be poured on the root of the tree. And so in the Vaishnava tradition, we do not separately worship, try to water the individual leaves, but rather we worship the source, the pure form of the mode of goodness, in the best way to satisfy Krishna at this time is through the performance of this sacrifice, Sankirtan, Harinama Sankirtana, and also the Prabhupada's book distribution, and bringing more and more people into this Sankirtan. So, somebody said something? It's not a lot, there's not so much in this verse, so I wonder if anybody has some ideas or comments or discussions to bring up, but they were glorifying Maharaj Yudhishthira. Yeah, Bhrigupati, please. Have to turn it on.
Papa translates Jamadvipi, and the word for word is the globe or the planet of our residence. But the description of Jamadvipi in the fifth canto is something it's much greater than the earth of our experience. Mm-hmm. Jamadvipi seems to have, because there's that chapter, the prayers of the residents of Jamadvipi, and when it describes some of them, it's you know, it's
bigger than just the earth.
Yeah, it's bigger than the earth as we're experiencing it. So could you say something about that?
I'm not that expert in it. I know Sadaputta has written some books about, you know, Jambadweep, you know, in terms of studying the... Because Prabhupada asked him to do this planetarium and explain, you know, the description of the universe that's there in the Srimad Bhagavatam and other Puranas. It's a systematic description. It's not just like some, you know, like a one-off, you know, somebody has invented something, but it's actually a scientific, cohesive whole system explanation. And it does correspond to observations. So the Jambudvip, but I'm not an expert enough to explain it the way Sadaputta has written books about how, you know, Jambudvip involves like the whole plane of the ecliptic or the, you know, the Bhumandala, okay. Oh, okay, it's a central island. So please, you explain it.
Well, the planetary system we're on is called Bhumandala. It's the central, okay. We're in the middle. And it consists of an island in the middle. That's Jambudvip. Say that's for argument's sake, that's Jambudvip. And then there's an ocean around that. And then there's an island around that. And there's an ocean around that. And an island around that. And I think there's seven concentric islands, circular islands, and oceans surrounded, you know, by surrounding them. And each of the oceans is consists of a different substance. There's an ocean of salt water, there's an ocean of milk, there's an ocean of yogurt, there's an ocean of ghee, honey, I'm not sure, but you know, just to give you an
sugar
idea.
Cane juice, sugar cane and, juice and liquor, I think.
Right, right. And also each island is twice the width of the preceding island. So, you know, if the first one is X, 2X, 4X, like this, so they get bigger as they're going out. And anyway, Jambudvip's right in the middle. And one
sounds
of the
like a dartboard. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, like a dartboard, right. And one of the outstanding geographical features of Jambudvip is a mountain called Mount Sumeru, which is it's described as it's a pericap. It means it's like an ice cream cone. It's shaped like an ice cream cone. It's bigger at the top than it is at the bottom. And once the bottom third of that mountain, Mount Sumeru, is underground. So we're just seeing the top two-thirds, which is two-thirds of a million miles high. So Jambudvip is two-thirds of a million. It's altogether, it's about a million miles, and two-thirds of that is above ground level. And on the, it's made of gold. It's another interesting. And the top is twice as wide as the bottom. And I can't remember the dimensions of that, but it's shaped like an ice cream cone. So, Jambudvip, it's kind of, that's out there. That's, I can't remember how far out, but it's, I think that it sort of corresponds with our, it's about 100 million miles out, according to the Bhagavatam, and that's, the scientists say that the sun is about 93 million miles away, so there's some correspondence there between those
the
two.
The Lokaloka Mountains?
Yeah. Yeah, the sun rides on a chariot right above, and this is some sort of a orbit around the Jambudvip, basically. And there's different varshas on Jambudvip, and they're described in the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's quite a bit more extensive than the earth of our experience, a lot more. You know, the earth of our experience is very minute in that book that you were referring to that Sadaputta wrote, Vedic Cosmography and Astronomy. He, you know, works out, he does the arithmetic or the mathematics, and it's, Jambudvip is just a very, I mean, Bhart Varsha, the earth of our experience, is just like a very teeny little place within the entire region of Jambudvip. So,
there are more things in heaven and earth than are dreamt of in your philosophy. If you guys, is anybody familiar with the play called Hamlet by William Shakespeare? There's, in those days, philosophy meant, like, science hadn't yet been like a separated thing. You know, the philosophy was often the philosophy of like explaining nature and the explaining all the whole world and everything was philosophy. So Hamlet's friend Horatio was a student that, you know, he was a scholar, so he knew a lot about the explanations of what the best people of the world at that time, very different from what people think, modern scientists think today, and I'm sure in 1,000 years it's going to be very different again. This is 400 years ago. So Hamlet had seen his father's ghost, and the ghost had told him all kinds of things about how he has to walk the earth until his sins are purged away and these different things, because he was killed before he was able to repent for his sins. And then, you know, Hamlet tells his friend, you know, there's more things in the world than you can, than your little scientists can imagine, you know.
Well, Bhumandala is the middle planetary system. You know, there's different, I think there's 14 planetary systems. Sometimes it's referred to as the three worlds, and sometimes Bhaktivinoda Thakur referred to as the 14 worlds. Prabhupada used both. So there's Bhumandala. Above Bhumandala is Bhuvar. Then, you know, like you're saying, the Gayatri Mantra, Om, Bhur, Bhava, Swata. So you have Bhumandala, Bhuvar, Swa. Then there's Janaloka, Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, and Sashaloka. Six above us and seven below us. And the ones below us are like Atala, Talatala, Palatala, like that. The lowest being, I think, Patala Loka, which, and then Yamaraj resides below that, I think. I can't remember now. But, you know, there's the seven below us. And so then Bhumandala is right in the middle. And it's has a diameter of 4 billion miles. That's where that figure comes from. You know, when Lord Krishna was speaking to Brahma, he said, your universe is 4 billion miles in diameter. And we're right in the middle. We're right in the middle. Actually, what's right in the middle is Mount Sumeru, and we're just kind of, we're pretty close to the middle. I mean, so Jambudvipa is the middle island, the central island, and the middle planetary system of Bhumandala. And it's like Sataputta gave the example of, like, I don't know if you remember, but back when we were kids, we had phonographs, and you had like the turntable, and there was a spindle in the middle that came up, and you used to be able to stack the records one on top of the other, and then as one finished playing, the other would drop down. So he said the planetary systems are situated something like that. They're just a bunch of like phonograph records, one on top of the other, and like that. That's as much as I can. One interesting point, though, just since we had that, he quoted that verse here, 9:25, about that. And there's that line, Bhutani Yanti Bhuteja, you know, those who worship the ghosts and spirits take birth among such beings. So Sataputta, in one lecture I was listening to, he explained that, you know, they have their own, the ghosts and spirits that are referred to in that verse, they're not like the ghost that, you know, Hamlet experienced of his father, who's just like a, you know, somebody who had no ghost material body and was just wandering around the earth. These are ghostly beings. They have their own societies. They have their own lokas, you know. They're basically, you know, followers or worshippers of Lord Shiva, but they're beings, and you know, they have their own civilizations and the whole works. So that's what's, when that, you know, it's mentioned ghosts and spirits, it's sometimes we have this, you know, immediately our only experience of ghosts and spirits is what we, you know, learn when we were kids from
horror stories, ghost tales. But yeah,
they're beings that they're predominantly influenced by the mode of ignorance, but, you know, they have whole civilizations and lokas like that. That's at least that was his understanding and what he presented in the lecture. Well, the only thing I heard, once again, from Sataputta was that the Pitri lokas, that's actually that's the biggest planetary systems. There's more Pitri lokas than all the other, you know, I can't remember the relationship, but this is a lot of them, you know, and I can't remember much more than that. They mentioned, talked about in the Puranas, but they're vast, they're extensive. It's not just like, you know, one little planet, Pitri loka. There's like many Pitri loka planets. Which kind of makes sense because, you know, there's a lot of, most people don't become demigods generally, so the Pitri lokas are like where maybe a lot of the population of the universe wind up, but he didn't say much more than that.
So. Yeah, Raksha.
Slightly different question. On the sacrifices that are referred to here, that Yudhishthir Maharaj perform sacrifices and service. Now, you mentioned, you know, in this age, of course, it's Sankirtan and all that. But during that time, it was not that. So what type of sacrifices was Yudhishthir Maharaj doing or performing? Do we know?
He did, yeah. He did Rajasuya sacrifice. He did horse sacrifice. There are different Vedic sacrifices, and these, and they would be performed, sponsored by a great king who was wealthy enough to be able to do it. And you had to assemble the ingredients. Also, to do a Rajasuya sacrifice, in particular to become the emperor, you had to receive the, that all the kings of the world had to agree to allow you to be the one who could perform the sacrifice. So you send that. So he, so there's a whole story. It's in the Mahabharata, but it's also described a lot in Srimad Bhagavatam of how the Rajasuya sacrifice was performed. And Krishna was elected president, and Shishupal complained. And but they had sent a horse out, a challenge horse, and you let the horse roam around and you follow it. And as it goes through different people's kingdoms, they want to capture it. But you say, no, you have to let this horse wander in your kingdom. So wherever it goes, then the king either agrees to accept that that the person performing the sacrifice is the emperor and pay tribute to him, or else there'll be a fight. And then, you know, depending on the outcome of the fight, the person may or may not be able to perform the sacrifice. So Bhima and Arjuna were sent around. And then they had to get sufficient gold to perform the sacrifice, and they were able to find some gold from a previous age that had been hidden or buried. Some gold. When in the old days, the very old days, people would just eat, you know, like kind of like we used plastic paper plates or something like that. You know, they'd have gold utensils, and they have a big, you know, meal and everything, and then they just would put them somewhere. Yes.
Prabhupada tells a story to that effect. I think it was Maharaj Mandata. Did that name sound familiar to you?
Yeah.
He performed some sacrifice, and of course, you know, the Kshatriyas would invite all the Brahmins. They would be, you know, so they would come, and the king would remunerate them by giving them gold plates and this and that. And the Brahmins would take it because they didn't want to be rude. And then this is what Prabhupada described. And then when they would leave the sacrifice, they'd be thinking, well, I don't know, what is the value of this thing? You know, they got to carry this big, heavy load of gold. They just put it down someplace. So when they wanted to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice, Arjuna was assigned the task of gathering wealth because they needed so much gold, etc. So he didn't know what he was kind of bewildered. Where do I find this quantity of gold? And Krishna tipped him off. He told him to go to such and such place, and where that sacrifice had been performed, and knowing that big quantities of gold had been just left there previously by the Brahmins who received that charity from Maharaj Mandata. So Arjuna went there, and he, you know, acquired all that wealth, and he got the name Dhaneshwar. That's a name of Arjuna, Dhaneshwar, which means the Lord of Wealth, or servant of the Lord of Wealth. The
conqueror of wealth, yeah. The Lord of Wealth, yeah. Or Dhananjaya, right? Probably both. In the Bhagavad Gita, he's often called Dhananjaya.
Do you remember also in Srimad Bhagavatam, I don't know where it's explained, and even now in Prabhupada said in Himalaya you can find the peak of mountain is made of gold, one hill, you know. I don't know where it's mentioned, but Sabbath is interesting.
But we won't be able to find it if we're not qualified. I think that's part of the point of this verse, that the materialist might, you know, invent, you know, gold detection devices, you know, some kind of Geiger counter like thing that will hear gold and they'll go out, just like they go out to find uranium and stuff. There are people that go out to find gold miners, you know, prospectors. There's gold rushes and stuff. And if people really, you know, thought, oh, there's this mountain of gold in the Himalayas, all of a sudden the Himalayas would be overrun by greedy people trying to find the gold. But really, nobody gets anything unless they deserve it, and no one can go to the higher planets unless they deserve it. And that's part of the point in this purport, that no forceful entrance is allowed. Just like in previous ages, people tried to, like Ravana tried to get people to go to the heavenly planets without the qualification without qualifying themselves by acquiring the qualities of the people in the heavenly planets through the performance of sacrifice. So we were talking again about these sacrifices, and these were great, sort of great pageants, great affairs of state, where it was also a way, you know, it was a way of performing welfare activities, that the prasadam from those sacrifices, not just food, which was distributed freely, but, you know, but also clothing and ornaments and the other necessities that people had would be redistributed in this way. In order to perform the great sacrifice, first of all, it was the great cultural activity. Instead of everybody going out to watch a football game or a cricket match or something like that, you know, it was this or a play or drama. But here was a great religious performance in which the demigods would be summoned by expert priests, and the demigods would actually come and participate and partake of their portions of the prasadam in the sacrifice. And so the whole population would be involved in working for the sacrifice. You know, like nowadays, everything's based on the corporations, right? Everybody works for big corporations, and unless the corporations are healthy, then the economy will be bad and people will have problems. But in those days, there would be the big sacrifices would be going on, and all the different segments of society had their roles to play in participating in the sacrifice. And then, you know, from the performance of the sacrifice also, the prasadam would be properly distributed so that the whole society would be healthy and the demigods would be pleased. And so there would be no scarcity of the ingredients of a successful, healthy, and wealthy life. You know, this is described elsewhere in the Bhagavatam, that the oceans would give jewelry and pearls and things like that. The earth would give up jewelry like diamonds and things. And there was no scarcity. There was always plenty of food. Really, what do we need? You know, I mean, we don't need. We have this kind of currently everybody has to have computers and cars and different things that they spend a lot of their disposable income on. But mostly what we need is, you know, food, shelter, clothing, and peaceful environment and good friends, good association, good culture, simple living and high thinking, Srila Prabhupada would say. So these are the things we need for a successful life, is to have, you know, a good community where we can talk about Krishna together. Yes, Rakshit.
On the sacrifices, Bhagavad Gita also refers to these sacrifices, you know, third chapter, sacrifice to Vishnu. So some of the ones that you just described, people meeting and doing a sacrifice all together and then serving prasadam and pleasing the demigods. Would that then be similar to the one that's described in the Bhagavad Gita, sacrifice to Vishnu, that in the beginning he said the Lord sent living entities and all the paraphernalia and everything that was needed to do the sacrifice, and Lord Vishnu was pleased. So the question is this, that that type of sacrifice performed at that time, is that relevant today? Does that go on? Because many people would ask, we'd like to do sacrifice. And they may not know about Sankirtan Yajna. They will call a priest and do a fire ceremony at home. Many people do that. They get a house and they will do a fire ceremony and they think they are doing sacrifice. So how do we put this in the context of whether they are doing it correctly or whether they are misled, or where does all that fit? Is this the type of sacrifice that's recommended in the Bhagavad Gita, that is sacrifice to Vishnu?
Well, in the 12th canto, there's a description of how in different ages there were different processes of self-realization. In the Satya Yuga, there was a process of meditation, Ashtanga Yoga, sitting down and meditating, controlling the pranayama and, you know, the eight limbs of yoga. And it was difficult to perform in this age. And then in the Treta Yuga, there were these huge sacrifices which require very expert priests, very highly qualified population, and a great deal of wealth. There would be huge amounts of grain and, you know, utensils had to be made of precious metals and difficult ingredients that are difficult to obtain. And then in the Dwapara Yuga, the recommended path of self-realization was the deep, opulent worship of the deity according to rules and regulations. And in this age, because all of those things are difficult, the loud chanting of the holy names, congregational glorification of Krishna, is the primary recommended sacrifice. So we can do the sacrifices that are prescribed in the Vedas. If we have some guru that's explaining how to do them, for example, you know, in the shastras, the householders are supposed to perform a fire sacrifice every day. There's five kinds of sins that one incurs in one's ordinary life, you know, just by walking and, you know, drinking and things like that. We're killing little entities and things like that. There's different kinds of sins, and they have to be counteracted. A lot of people are performing sacrifice with some fruitive mentality, and Krishna's explaining that in Bhagavad Gita too, that that the Vedas deal mostly with the three modes of material nature, and that the those who are the Vedavada Ratas, who, you know, they're not avipashyata, their knowledge is not complete, and they attract people to perform sacrifice. Like the, and this verse is talking about Maharaj Yudhisthira was prepared to go to the heavenly planets. But really, Yanti Madhyajino Api Mam, Krishna says it's better to go to Krishna, not to the heavenly planets. But he, Krishna says in the second chapter, you know, Yam Imang Pushpitang Vacham Pravadantya Vipaschitaha, you know, Kriya Vishesha Bahulam. I'm combining, it's two verses. But he says, you know, Janmapala Prada, they want higher birth and other kinds of fruits of the sacrifice that are promised. And in the ninth chapter, he also describes these sacrifices that are performed by those who follow the three Vedas, right? Yak Trividyamang Somapak Putapapa Yagyar Ishtvayar Swargatim Prartayante Te Punyamasadya Surendra Lokam Ashnanti Divyan Dividdeva Bhogan. So the people want to, they want elevation to heavenly planets where they can drink the soma beverages and enjoy a great material enjoyment. But this is still the enjoying mentality. They're working, they're doing something, some ritual, in order to get something for them to enjoy. And Krishna condemns that, basically, because Tetang Bhukpa Swargalokang Vishalang Kshine Punye Marti Lokang Vishantim Evang Trai Dharma Anuprapana Gatagata Kama Kama Levante. So he condemns that they have to come back again. You know, they... Yes, you can perform some sacrifice, and as a result, you get to enjoy the result, but even that enjoyment is temporary. Kamas taisthaya hritagana prapadyante nyadevata tang tang niyamam ashtaya prakritya nyataksvaya. A few verses later, he says that people of alpa medhasa, people of small intelligence, they worship the demigods. Their fruits are antavattu palang tesham yajantye. Antavattu palang tesham. Yeah, so in the seventh chapter, he's saying that. So, there are all kinds of sacrifices prescribed in the Vedas, and mostly, in order to encourage people to be religious, to control themselves, to perform sacrifices, to live in a civilized human society, there are inducements that this will get you better enjoyment later. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's, you know, dharmak projita kaita votra paramoni matsaranam satam. It's a different kind of literature. That it's not promised. That's called cheating dharma. You know, in order to get people to do good. Sometimes, you know, you have a little child, and you want them to go to school, because to go to school, they'll get a better education and stuff like that. But they can't understand that, you know, to go to school, because there'll be a value in itself to having an education. So instead, you say something like, "Well, if you go to school, if you get straight A's, I'll give you, you know, a reward or something like that, and they're working hard to get the reward. It's the way. So the similarly, Vyasadeva encouraged people in the matter of religion by also explaining the rewards that they would get, and they will get these rewards. But Narada Muni condemned him in the beginning of Bhagavatam, in the fifth chapter of Bhagavatam. He was feeling incomplete afterwards. And Narada Muni said, because you've misled the people, you've encouraged them in the matter of religion by promising them enjoyment, and that's fine, you'll be able to get people to be religious, they'll do sacrifices and so forth, but they won't be able to give up the mentality of enjoyment still. So Narada Muni said, what you should really do is describe the glories of the personality of Godhead and his names, forms, qualities, pastimes. And you can do this. You're qualified to see all these things in trance and describe them in perfect poetry. And that will give the ultimate benefit to the humans. This is in the fifth chapter and also the sixth chapter of the first canto. Beautiful. We should learn these verses. Jugupsitam dharma kritena shashatam. So yes, there are all these sacrifices that are prescribed, but Srila Prabhupada is our guru, and in the line of the acharyas from Lord Chaitanya, Srila Prabhupada is not encouraging us very much in the way of these Vedic sacrifices, which Krishna also didn't encourage very much. Even though we just had the Govardhan Puja last week, you could see that there was a sacrifice being prepared for Indra, and it was a traditional sacrifice, more or less traditional, said Nanda Maharaj. But Krishna changed it, and he said, no, let's worship Govardhan Hill. And so he basically, Krishna, he did participate in the Rajasuya sacrifice of King Yudhishthir and so forth. He was very friendly with the sons of Queen Kunti, and especially Arjuna, and he, he participated in the glories of their kingdom and how they were ruling the kingdom. But he was really encouraging in his Bhagavad Gita. He's encouraging Sarva Dharman Parityaja Mame Kang Sharanang Raja Ahang Tuang Sarva Papibyo Mokshishyami Ma Suchaha. He's giving a new religion, really, not so much the Vedic rituals, which are, followed by people who are encouraged by flowery language to try to enjoy. But he's saying the Vedas deal mostly with the three modes of material nature, and that it's better to be transcendental to the modes of nature, and to not be dependent on thoughts of protection and gain, but nir yoga kshemam atmavan, be situated in the self. So this is yoga. Real yoga is the distinction between yoga and, I guess, ritualistic religion. The ritualistic religion, people think if I go, if I do something, if I kneel down, if I pray, I genuflect in these different ways, then I'll get some reward for it. That's the way we think in our conditioned state. We're thinking, what will I get from it? Sometimes people say, "Oh, I worship Krishna so much, and now I'm still not rich," But that's not the mood of the devotee. It's like if you really worship Krishna, you'll get the experience of love. You'll get the experience of the happiness of actually being able to be in Krishna's presence, to behold his qualities, to understand his beauty, and to become addicted to that. It's almost like, instead of thinking, if I did it right, I should get some reward, doing it right becomes its own reward. And making a mistake and not doing it right becomes its own failure. It's not like, oh, I made a mistake, now what? Something bad is going to happen to me. No, it's like, what bad happened to me is, I didn't properly respect the guru, I didn't properly respect the devotee, I didn't properly, when we become a little more mature, rather than being concerned with the good and bad results of our actions, which are going to come. They are going to come. It's part of, you know, karma, although ultimately Krishna's in control of it all. But rather than being so concerned with the good and bad results of our actions, to do the good and bad actions themselves is the real, you know, we have to realize that that's the real mercy. To be able to get the dust of the devotees on our body is actually the reward. It's not the means to something else, you know. Yes, Krishna Purushottam.
Hare Krishna Prabhu.
Yes. Yes.
When you, so out of context, but when you told about like we are using these golden plates and silver, like in olden days they used to cook in the iron pans, like tawa it called. So now we are coming with stainless steel, aluminium and all those things. But when you cook in the iron plate, iron bowls or something, so you'll get the calcium and all the vitamins in it. So there is no need of taking additional vitamins and all those things. So if you follow the Vedic system, like as it is, so it automatically gives all the all the ingredients and whatever required for which we are taking the prasad. And yesterday also I was discussing with Rakshit Prabhu, like I think in Penn State, one of our devotees sent an email to the food industry. So there is a professor. And he emailed all the milk products which having the vitamin D3 in it. So it contains a fish oil in it. So I was just thinking, like, we are doing Ekadashi and next day you take a milk and all our Ekadashi is gone, right? So
we should take good milk if we can. They have the organic milk, but even that is not so good. There's one lady, I don't remember her name, but she has a little farm and she has some cows. She's a devotee, and she's actually, for $10 a gallon, which is not so bad, you know, she can provide you with milk from cows that she will guarantee will never be slaughtered and they're not treated with anything and stuff like that. But at any rate, getting back to the point, I remember one time Vaisheshika was walking around, I think it was walking around Govardhan Hill or something like that, and he met some saintly devotee who told him that in the holy name all the vitamins are there. So the material atmosphere is always contaminated. You know, no matter how good we do things in the material atmosphere and we try to follow the Vedas very well and we cook in the right pots and we cook the right food and we get the best ingredients and everything like that, but there's always something contaminated in the atmosphere. And but by doing the Sankirtan, we get in touch with something that's completely perfect and pure. And that's our real life, you know. That's our real happiness, is in service. We're serving anyway. The idea that we're enjoying is actually an illusion. The idea that we're going to do something and then we're going to get some result that we can enjoy is actually an illusion, because that's not our constitutional position. Our real nature is that we're nothing other than servants of Krishna. We're meant for serving Krishna. And the whole process of self-realization is the process of getting out of this, you know, sort of psychological illness of thinking that we're these bodies and that what's good for the body is what's good for us. And instead we have to think of, you know, to use the body to please Krishna and to use it with the right mood of devotion is what's good. That's our real self-interest, not to get something in exchange for it. And Maharaj Yudhishthir had that mood, and therefore he was qualified to live in perfect piety without any he never told a lie. You know, he could live in a way, he never broke a vow. You know, the Pandavas could live in such a way that all of the rules of religious righteous life were easily followed by them, by the grace of Krishna, because they were self-realized, their mood, because they were Krishna's own personal friends, and their mood was to serve him. Dharman tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. Really, what does it mean to be religious? It's to follow the orders of God. Ultimately, that's what's to be religious. If you try to study, you know, as a lawyer and study all the independent rules and what's right and what's wrong and, all the different, for rituals, you know, you have so many things that you have to do, it can become complicated. And there are always situations that become complicated. We can kind of see in Ramayana, in earlier age, it was a little more black and white, a little more clear. And then in Mahabharata, it becomes a little more mixed up. And now we're in Kali Yuga, and everything is upside down, you know.
Prabhu, we need to set an example for others, right? Like, we can do, means, in the, like, we need to take at least best out of it. Like, so we know it's sin. It's not, it's actually sin only, right? And still we do it, it's ignorance. That's what my thinking.
Do what? Drinking the milk or what?
Not drinking the milk. I mean, it's anything. Like, if we know we are doing wrong, then still we do it. We're not educating the other people.
Yeah. The devotees have all the good qualities of the demigods. I have to stop the class now because we're going to get out on Sankirtan early, but I wanted to say... I want to say something, and then Ramananda Sakha has the last word. But the devotees, this is an important point, is that the devotees actually have to develop the good qualities, peacefulness, tolerance, satisfaction of mind, you know, not disturbing any other living entity, all these qualities that Krishna is describing, this Daivi Sampat. You see the word here in this verse, Sampada, the first word is, you know, opulence. And that, you know, there's asura sampat, or the opulence of the demons, the qualities of the demons, and then there's the daivi sampat, or the divine qualities of the devotees. They're described in the 16th chapter of the Gita, and in the 12th chapter of the Gita, Krishna is talking about what pure devotional service is. He describes all these qualities that devotees have, and Srila Prabhupada makes it clear that if you're really a devotee, you have those qualities, and we have to develop those qualities. But we can't just develop them by pretending to have them. But if we extraneously, he says, we can't develop them extraneously. But if we really become devotees, then we develop them very easily, automatically. But if we think we'll become devotees and not develop those qualities, it means we're really cheating. We're doing something wrong. You know, a devotee doesn't commit crimes. A devotee is not cruel to other living entities. A devotee is not cruel to cows and children and women and things like that. This is not the qualities of devotee. So if we have those qualities, it means we're not really, fully devotees. We're just pretender devotees, kind of. So Ramananda Sakha, yeah.
Regarding this Pandavas, throughout their life, they suffered from almost birth to till the war of Kurukshetra happened. And only after the war of Kurukshetra, they started getting some, in a so-called enjoyment. But then by the time they're already old, Arjuna had almost grandson. So what is... So when I think about it, actually what's going on here? You know, why they just suffered all the time? And then in the end, seemingly there is happiness, but now they're already old, and what happiness can they have when everyone has died there?
Their happiness is that they knew Krishna all their lives, and that Krishna was their close friend. And that is a greater happiness than having necessarily ease and comfort and palatial palace. You know, like... Suppose you live in a palace. Suppose you live in a big house and you have everything you need in their house and everything. It doesn't make you happy, you know, that you can always get food whenever you want. Maybe you have a cook that will cook you and you say, I feel like having Chinese food today. Cook me that. But it's still, you may have loneliness or, you know, not being fulfilled in your mood, your affect, your, you know, psychologically. That happiness... is you have from yoga. The real happiness, unlimited happiness, it comes from within. It's not a matter of sangsparsha jabhoga. It's not a matter of contact with the senses, but it's a matter of your heart being in the right place. And that the Pandavas always had, even though they were banished and they lost the gambling match and they you know, they were being poisoned and put in a house to burn down in a house, and all these different intrigues were always against them. And they were happy, even in the living in the forest, and they had to struggle, but, you know, and we have to struggle in our lives too. Srila Prabhupada would say, without the heart struggle, what is the possibility of a glorious victory? So you might say, oh, you know, we're going on a book distribution, it's cold. Actually, today it's a beautiful day to go on book distribution. It's going to be, you know, we have this marathon going on, and next week it might be raining, you know. So we have the expression in English, make hay while the sun shines. So today is a beautiful day, and it's not, you know, and what more pleasant thing to do to you know, to talk to people and say, here, take this book. But it might not seem pleasant, or sometimes we might have to. Back when I was a kid, we were in Canada, in the prairies, Edmonton, and Medicine Hat, Alberta, and it was 40 below zero, and we still had to go out and distribute books, get on these thick gloves and this heavy, you know, stuff over our ears, and go out there in front of the Canadian liquor store, and, you know, Kripaniti and Yogi Nath and the guys would be out there distributing the books. So that's the real happiness, is to be doing it, to be rightly situated, to be pleasing the doing it, and to be, you know, mentally and emotionally rightly situated, and that's what austerity is, that you have to do your duty even if it's maybe physically uncomfortable for you, but you have to do, you know, you take your bath even when it gets cold, you take your bath. So that's that. Human life requires, religious life requires some austerity. It's not a whole lot of austerity. You know, we don't have to torture ourselves and you know, fast until our ribs are sticking out you know, sleep on a bed of nails or something. That's not. But our austerity is we have to do our duty, and it's really quite pleasant to go out and tell people, hey, I've got, you know, what would you do if you weren't a devotee and you were just a eat, drink, and be merry person or something? You would still, you know, sit around in the coffee shop and say, hey, I'm reading this book. What are you reading? You know, isn't this good? Isn't that, you know? It's the same activity, just the wrong book. So we can do all the same things and have the same. The devotee's not devoid. Yogi prangsthanam. Daneshu yat punya palang pratis. Yagyeshu tapaksu chaiva. Yagyeshu. The eighth chapter. I'm sorry, I'm getting it. Just start me, help me out, Bhrigupati. The last verse of the Vedeshu Yagyeshu Tapaksu Chaiva Daneshu Yat Punya Palang Pradishtam Atyeti Tat Sarvamidang Viditva Yogi Parangsthanam Upaiti Chadyam. So the devotee who's engaged in yoga, bhakti yoga, he's not devoid of the results of all these other things: study of the Vedas, performance of charity, performance of sacrifice, performance of austerity, you know, Vedeshu, Yageshu, sacrifice, Tapaksu, austerity, Daneshu, charity. So the Punya Palam, the fruits of pious activities, the devotee is not devoid of any of those, but Yogi parangsthanam upaiti chadyam. He's going to the highest situation. So if you go to the highest situation, automatically all the other things are there. They're all already included. No necessity for going after any of the different things that people think is desirable. Once again, the thought that anything is desirable and valuable if it's not connected to Krishna, that's the illusion. The idea that I'm not a servant of Krishna, I'm something else, that's the illusion. And then Krishna gives you this idea, well, what are you? Then you're this material body, which is an enjoyer. It's got senses and it's an enjoyer. But this is the illusion, that this physical enjoyment is your self-interest, and the way to get out of that illusion is by chanting Hare Krishna, performing Sankirtan like we're going to do today, and then we'll gradually awaken to the blissful life of who we really are, which is serving Krishna. That's really happiness. So this is a class about how to become a happy and successful person, really. But it's not what we might think, because, you know, like the Pandavas were the most successful, even though they had trials and tribulations all their life. And we may have trials and tribulations too. We can follow their example of how to not be deterred or discouraged or broken by such trials in life, but to use them as, like Queen Kunti did, as only an opportunity to know that this would bring her closer to Krishna. Yes.
Rama, that he maintained that steadiness even though he was banished to go to the forest for 14 years. He never complained, why this fate on me? Or he just accepted the order and went and still remained very steady, just like the Pandavas would be another example.
So he set this example of tolerance. This is an example for us. We have to be tolerant, we have to be humble, we have to be ready to give all respect to all. And and not expect any respect in return. And in such a state of mind, we can go on Sankirtan all the time. Granthiraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.
Hari Bol.